back up for 30 seconds. You might learn something.
Welcome to Plum Love Foods Live, the number one live audio culinary industry show for chefs by chefs. Hosted by multi-time Food Network winner, award-winning chef, TV host and global icon, and national treasure,
at least in his mind,
Chef Plum. So close that saute station, make sure the grill is off, and grab that shift drink, because we're about to mess up your mise en place. Here's Chef Plum.
Yeah. Happy Thursday, everybody. What's going on? Sitting here at the basement, at the bar studio. Just popped the top on a cold one because I can't decide if I want to keep drinking any more alcohol. Seems like ever since Mohegan Sun, I can't drink like I used to. My voice is weird. You know, my body's going through changes. I'm becoming a man, I think. I'm becoming a brand new, cute little girl or something. I don't know. Either way, whatever it is, it's definitely affecting my alcohol intake, which is a weird thing for me, at least in my world. You know, in my voice, it feels like I think everyone's getting sick, so I'm getting it too, or getting over it or something. Well, whatever. None of that actually matters. Welcome to Plum Love Foods. It's your boy, Chef Plum. Happy to be here tonight with you guys. It's going to be a lot of fun. We got a great show. Well, that music can only mean one thing. Ladies and gentlemen, co-hosting the program tonight with me, it's the one, it's the only, Chef Robbie Prado. Robbie, what's happening, man?
How you doing, bud?
Dude, you got some brand new intro music there. It sounds like you're at a barbecue or something. It's crazy.
That's awesome, man.
Or you're like in a blues club. I can't figure it out. What's going on with you, man? How you been?
I'm good, man. Living the dream. Living the dream.
Living the dream, huh? That's all right, man. Yes, you got a lot of irons in the fire right now. Things going. Are you getting ready for the summertime? Are you ready for it to come now, or do you want it to wait a little bit longer?
I could use it to come now, but I could also use the time to get some stuff ready. So, you know, it'll be here before we know it, and we'll be rocking and rolling and crushing it in the Hamptons. And, you know, more good things to come.
That's the plan, man. That's the plan. Well, appreciate you coming in tonight and hanging out with us. It's always great having you on. You do a great job. I remember the first time you sat in with me was that we were in Montauk together, weren't we?
Yes, sir. We talked with Chad.
Yeah, we did. Chad from True Cooks. We sat there. We talked. We had quite a few beverages there on the front porch in Montauk, right?
Yes, sir.
Well, now you're a regular at it. You're like good at this stuff. That's the bad part, man. I think that Dave and Jeff are gonna feel a little threatened by having you here.
Good.
Good. That's what's up, man. Well, welcome to the show, Robbie. I appreciate it. We got a great guest on tonight, man. Chef Lenny Messina. What a nice guy. Listen, Lenny's a guy I met doing the Mohegan Sun Wine and Food Festival for 2 years in a row. And this guy, man, one of the nicest human beings in the world, man. He's just such a sweetheart, a nice guy, a friendly guy, and talks to anybody. So I'm happy to have him on. And also with you, it's two Long Island guys, man. Are you familiar with Lola? Have you seen his restaurant?
I actually one of my last full-time private chef jobs was about a mile and a half down the road.
Oh, so. Nice. That's awesome, man. Well, hey, you never know. You might run into the guy, right?
Well, I would have if I had nice enough clients to ever let me go before his place closed, but I was always working.
Damn.
So I wish I'd made this connection earlier. It would have been great to be able to have a connection to help me get product in the area.
Hey, that's what's up right there, right? Because I'm sure this guy definitely knows it. He's got a lot of tie-ins with Hudson Valley foie gras, too, which we're going to talk all about that, which should be a lot of fun. I'm definitely a foie gras guy. Are you?
It has its... It's like everything, man. It has its place, and, you know, I feel that when done properly, it's an amazing ingredient. But there's so many chefs that just think that they can throw that on the menu and they're a great chef.
Right, right. Well, that's so. Definitely not always the case, that's for sure, right?
No. And you know, it's like I said, it's a good product. I love eating it when it's done right. Like anything, pretty much. But
100%. Well, awesome. Well, the fun news here is this week is that Jeffy has been doing a little producing work here on the program and is working on sponsors and things like that for us. And he's got a new company called Sizzle Platters. I don't know who they are. I've never heard of them, but apparently they make a bunch of different kitchen products. You ever heard of this company?
I have not.
Yeah, I haven't either. They sent us a little 1 minute bit to play here for them for their first commercial. So let's check out Sizzle Platters real quick, guys. Let's see what this company does. Let's see. Here we go.
Come on, hon. Of course we can eat here.
Oh, I don't think that's a good idea. They're closing in 5 minutes.
Don't be silly. They don't mind.
Really?
Two Top walking in.
Oh, no!
Are you tired of having that last customer walk in 5 minutes before closing? Is your station broken down and cleaned? Is it a Tuesday night and you have had hardly any covers? Well, don't worry. 5 minutes till closing can save the day. Just point the tube out of the kitchen and press the button. Shazam! The customer is gone.
Hey, dog, I don't know if that shit's right, but that shit works, son. You know what I'm saying?
Wow! 5 till closing gets me out of work right on time every night.
So many happy clients.
When you need to get out,
5 minutes to closing.
Just press that button and listen for the shout. When you need to get out,
5 minutes to closing.
Just press the button and listen for the shout.
5 minutes to closing.
Yeah!
A Sizzle Blade product.
Wow. Okay. Well, I guess that's a Sizzle Plates. I guess that's a product. 5 minutes to closing. It's I don't. Any ideas?
Where can I pick that up?
Yeah, it sounds like a great product, right? That sounds. Mm-hmm. We should find out where you can find those. Well, anyway, you guys, tonight we got a great guest on. We got the one and only chef Lenny Messina is going to join us here in just a second. Lenny is the executive chef and partner of Lola in Great Neck, New York. We became buddies at the Mohegan Sun Food and Wine Festival, but he's also liaison for Hudson Valley Foie Gras. He's done a lot of work with the ACF. The man's won more awards than I can write down because there's a lot of big words in that. But ladies and gentlemen, joining us right now, my new buddy, Chef Lenny Messina. Lenny, good evening, Chef. How are you, brother?
Chef, how are you? Thank you so much for having me on here today.
You're the man, man. I appreciate it, dude. I don't know. We're here hanging out, man. Just pop the top on a cold one. It's a Thursday night, and I'm sitting down with a couple of good brothers having a conversation, man. So living the dream. How about yourself?
Glad to be joining you. Gotta say, loving it.
Awesome, brother. Well, dude, you and I, we met at Mohegan Sun last year briefly. Then this past year, we hung out a little bit more. Had a great time. Obviously, one of the best events of the year, in my humble opinion. I know you do tons of events, but how was that event for you, man? Is it a good time?
That event is such a blast. I mean, just from start to finish, just all the events as individual pieces are just so unbelievable. The company is amazing. The chefs are amazing. It's definitely one of my highlights in every year, for sure.
Now, how'd you get involved with that?
Well, we provide some of the foie gras that we use, and I believe Chef Michael, the co-owner of Hudson Valley Foie Gras, has a great relationship with Mohegan,
yeah.
And he's been doing the event for years and years, and then about 3 years ago, I got asked to join in with Chef Michael, and then been kind of taking the reins from there, just as much as I love it, so I try to push my way in a little bit.
good for you, man, good for you. Well, it's a great event, man. It's definitely a great way to be a part of, and I'm always happy in the kitchen when I see you come walking in, your smiling face, and especially when I saw you bringing all that foie gras in. Are you kidding me? How much foie gras did you have this year?
We brought about 65 pounds of A-grade foie with us.
Holy shit. And you just open it up, and you're just going to town on it. I'm like, Chef, oh my God. And you're like, yeah, I'm making sliders. And I was like, holy shit.
I think most people thought it was burger sliders with foie, but it was just foie gras sliders.
It was just
that
foie.
That sounds amazing.
And what else? What did you put on there, too? You had a sauce, right? And a chutney or something?
Yeah, so we did like a spiced tomato chutney with black cardamom, ginger, some palm sugar, and then we braised that all down with caramelized onion, garlic, and then did it on a Martin's potato bun, of all things, one of the best breads.
Well, perfect. I mean, it's a perfect bun for a slider. That's for damn sure.
Exactly. You can't mess with it. It's perfect.
Dude, what a great dish. I can't remember. I think I had two of them sitting in front of you, and I had those very, very drunk women with me. I don't know who they were. They just showed up.
Oh, yes, I definitely recall that.
But yeah, what a great event, man. And then you being involved, I guess we'll start there, man. How do you get involved with Hudson Valley Foie? How does that happen?
So I was actually volunteering in Philadelphia for an event called Cochon, which is like a pork-forward event. And they were doing like some small sponsors, and Chef Michael was there doing like a foie gras challenge. So I was just volunteering for the event. And I got there, and I started making small talk with Chef Michael, and he says, where are you from? I said, I'm from Long Island. He says, Long Island? I'm from Long Island. Where? And small enough, well, about 20 minutes apart. He says, have you been to my restaurant? I said, no, I've never been to Great Neck. I don't even know where it is, really. He said, please come be my guest for dinner. And went for dinner, ended up applying for a job, got the job, and the rest is history from there.
Damn. That's crazy, man. I mean, it's a beautiful restaurant, right? I mean, the menu looks amazing. I've never eaten there. I do plan to on one of my trips out there this summer. But
yeah, I'd love to have you in.
It looks amazing, man. The food, the decor, the whole place just looks great. How long has it been open now?
We are in our 10th year now.
Wow. 10 years. Rob, that's no joke, man. That's respectable right there.
That is very respectable, and that is a tough a tough area to
yes, absolutely.
Pull off 10 years.
Wow. That's true, Robbie. You know, because you're from Long Island. So you know the area pretty well.
Absolutely, man. So if you before this weren't familiar with Great Neck, where are you from on Long Island?
So I'm from like the Farmingdale, Massapequa area. Mm-hmm. So it's like Middle Island, a little South Shore. So the North Shore was foreign to me at first. So that commute, it's about like 25 minutes, a half an hour from my house. But the town itself, you know. It is a little tough, but I have to say we're so fortunate to have such an amazing local support now. It really is a community-driven restaurant, which we are so grateful for.
Well, you know, so one of the things I did, I used to host a series for Edible Long Island, for Edible East End, called Edible on the Road, for Edible Magazine. And, you know, I got to experience and see how much beautiful, like, local food and local produce and just locally made products, not restaurants, but more... You know, I went to an amazing farmer's market out there and just saw how many, you know, great local farms and things like that are there. How important is that to you at the restaurant to use local products?
We try very hard, and our purveyor, Baldor, that we use for a lot of our produce, they do what's called a local pledge. And it's unbelievable. You can take the pledge and they will supply you with like direct connection with farms. And through their outlet and their ordering and so on, bring local produce right to the back door of the restaurant. And it's such an amazing connection between these farms. And you can talk directly with them. And it all gets channeled through Baldor, which definitely something I recommend a lot of restaurants should take a look at. So we are able to purchase a lot of our ingredients, local, seasonal, and meet with these different farmers, these different producers, and it's definitely come a long way, and it's part of the reason why I love cooking on Long Island so much.
You know, what a great thing to set up, though, for local farms from a big company like Baldor, like to be able to do that, to be able to supply, you know, Joe Farmer down the street, to be able to give his product to, you know, a restaurant or to a chef, to be able to do what they can with it. You know, that's a great program.
That's exactly what I thought, when you go on and you're looking through the products, you can actually read through bios and you put a face and a name to the products you're buying, and it's just it's such a nice connection that I never really found with any of the other distributors, you know, that a restaurant would be using on a large scale. So it's definitely a great offering.
Man, that sounds awesome, dude. And the food at the restaurant, man, how much control over the menu do you have? You 100% all you?
Yeah, Chef Michael and I collaborate on everything, but we've been working together literally every day for the last probably 6.5 years. So we think alike almost to the T. So I would say our collaboration is an execution of what the same vision that we both share.
Yeah, yeah, that's awesome, man. I mean, it's a great spot to be in. You've been there for a couple of years now, right?
Yeah, I'm in my fifth year now, so it's been a good long run already.
Wow, I mean, is it the end of the line for you there? Like, are you gonna, is that your kind of be all end all? Are you thinking long term, like in 10 years you'll do something of your own, or what's the long term plan?
You know, when I first started working for Chef Michael,
or is there one? Maybe there's not one.
I my aspiration was to grow as a cook and learn as much as I could, and I was fortunate to work for Chef Michael, who has literally traveled the world over and over and over, and his passion for food brought so many ingredients and so many techniques into my repertoire that I was just like, I had this insatiable hunger to just keep going and going and going. And, you know, along with that passion, I was able to move up within the company to my position now. And, you know, he's taken me under his wing like a son. And, you know, he wants to see me grow as well, which is why, you know, he provides me opportunities with Hudson and outside of Hudson doing events where I get to meet chefs like you. And, you know, I definitely don't have a destination of exactly where I want to be. I'm just grateful to be taking a great ride right now. And if it keeps moving in the direction that it's been for the last couple of years, then I think I'll be all right with wherever I do end up.
Yeah, I think you're doing all right, man. I think you're in a great spot with right now. But, you know, one of the things I think is great about your story, man, I mean, you kind of have a food family. Like, your dad is kind of – I mean, your dad's pretty well known in the pastry chef type world, right?
Absolutely. I always tell people when they were outside riding their bike or playing hockey in the street, I was learning how to make rainbow cookies. So it's you know, I grew up in a chef driven household, and you know, Christmas parties on Christmas morning, I would go in with my dad because he would be there and work in the kitchen with him a little bit. You know, not really working, but trying to learn. And it was definitely the seed that kind of planted the aspiration to see that this is hard work, but it's hands on, it's creative, and you can make a living and provide for your family. And I think that my dad was the benchmark of. You know, demonstrating to me who I wanted to be as an adult, as a father, as a husband, as whatever I end up, you know, throughout my life, seeing what he accomplished was kind of my standard.
Well, it's a tough life too, man. I try to tell kids. I mean, we live in a world right now, brother. I'm sure you see it too, especially in, you know, running a restaurant and hiring and firing people and whatnot. But I mean, we live in a world now where everybody in the world just wants to be a chef. Like, no one wants to take time. I mean, I've been doing this personally for 25 years. You know, I started at bottom of the barrel dishwasher and worked my way up. But nowadays, everybody wants to go to culinary school and come out and call themselves chef. You know, I went to culinary school, but I definitely wasn't a chef when I got out of culinary school. But how much do you see that now with people, man? Like, everyone kind of wants to take the old, you know, the short path, I guess, thanks to so much, you know, culinary entertainment and media and things like that. Like, I don't think people understand that, at least in my world, I call those things, and, you know, like the event you and I did a couple of weeks ago, and being able to travel and doing TV spots and doing that. Those are all byproducts of 25 years of experience for me. That's not what I tried to do. Yeah. That's just what's happened at this point. I mean, I don't know. I guess I said a whole lot there, but, you know, what do you think?
No, I mean, just to come full circle on what you're saying, you know, the whole food media thing is a blessing and a curse. You know, because of the food media and the way that chefs have been limelighted, I think that there's so many more opportunities for chefs who have put in the hard work to travel to all these different places, see these beautiful sights, cook, you know, on the beach, waterfront in California or in Hawaii. But, you know, going back to, like, the adolescence of cooking, I mean, my dad literally begged me. He's like, please don't go to culinary school. Just be a lawyer, be a doctor. And I said, no, Dad, I want to cook. And truthfully, nothing prepares you for the sense of dedication that you actually need. Because it's one thing to be a good cook and to be committed. But then to move on to, say, being, you know, thinking, using your mentality like an owner and having to worry about everything, your employees, how they're running, how, you know, how are they feeling today? What's going on? What can I fix? That whole mindset of the hospitality industry and what it takes to really be a chef. I think there's just so many people that don't even have a base understanding of what that concept is.
Oh, dude, couldn't agree more, man. Couldn't agree more. I mean, you have to work your way. I mean, how many years have you been doing this now?
My first job ever was a prep cook in a kitchen, and that was my freshman year of high school. So since then, it's been like, 14 years, I would say.
Yeah, so you've paid your dues, that's for sure, right?
Yeah, and you know what? Every single day, there is so much I'm learning. I'm grateful to be considered a chef, you know, and I'm humbled by that. But by all means, there's just so much. Every time I meet another chef, I act like a sponge because I know that there is so much more out there to learn. And the more that you can learn as a person and the more that I can pass on to my cooks, the better I am, the better they are, the better the industry is. So, you know, I never try to lose that humility and just wanting to be mentored and learn as much as I possibly can.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Absolutely. And I mean, you kind of have done a lot of stuff working with ACF and working with kids as well, right? Or did I read that wrong?
Yeah, no. So once I started in high, when I was in high school, I also did like a BOCES culinary arts program, and I had two amazing instructors there that really springboarded me into like competitive cooking. Yeah. You know, doing some challenges, which wasn't really for the sake of earning a title. It was more for the sake of them saying, "Here's another outlet to push yourself and try harder." And you know, as a kid, I wasn't like as focused, so. I tried those things, and I found that the creativity allowed me to be more adventurous, so I enjoyed that. And then I took that a little more seriously once I went away to college for culinary, and I joined the American Culinary Federation student team. And then from there, we won the New York State, the Northeast region, and the national championship.
That's baller right there. That's just baller. Absolutely.
That's awesome, man.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Robbie. Why don't you tell them a little bit more about where they can find out some information about Chef?
All right. So you can find Chef Len Messina at Lenny_Messina on Instagram. He's the executive chef at Lola at 113A Middle Neck Road, Great Neck, New York. And you can also check out there. He's a culinary liaison for Hudson Foie Gras. And
and of course, restaurantlola.com for a little more information there. You can see menus and whatnot.
Yes, sir.
Chef, let me ask you this, man. So when it comes down to – actually, you know, let me just – are you married? You're married, right?
No, girlfriend.
You have a girlfriend. That's right. So this is what I understand, right? And this is just – this. Hear me out before you're like, hey, you're a creepy guy. Okay? Just hear me out for a second. Yeah. So, you know, Rob's a cook. He's got a – his wife's attractive. You know, our buddy Jeff, his wife's super attractive. You know, I'm married to a 10. I'm a 4.5 at best, right? I've seen pictures of your girlfriend on your Instagram. Your girlfriend's a 10. You're maybe a 5. How does this happen for us? How do we do this? I don't know how it works. Like, what do we do that makes this happen?
I wish I could answer that.
Right?
I mean, truthfully, it's so wild. It's just the fact that chefs are looked at, like, I don't know, it's the cooking, I have no idea, but our profession is like so tiring and so sweaty. I truthfully have no idea,
brother. I think that if we all got together and we were all hanging out and had all of our wives and girlfriends with us, it would legitimately look like the end of the Revenge of the Nerds movie. Like, we ended up at the end with the hot girls. I don't know how that happens, but that's what it would look like if we started walking down the street. It doesn't make any sense.
You know, Robbie, I have to agree, but I am not going to complain.
No, I'm definitely not complaining, but I'm just waiting to, like, I'm waiting for someone, some cameras to show up and be like, aha. I mean, I've been with my wife since 1998. Like, I mean, if it hasn't happened yet, I don't know if it's going to happen, but I don't know. Rob, you got no answers either, do you?
No, it's a blessing and a curse, man.
Yeah, or it's roofies work well. I don't know.
Yeah.
No, I'm just kidding. So, Chef, is your girlfriend, is she in the business, or did you meet her in the business?
She is the front of house manager at Lola, so she handles all the other half of the restaurant that I do not tolerate on a day-to-day.
Yeah, but see, that makes it easier for you, though, because you guys were in the business. My wife and I met in the business, and she's not there anymore, but that's where we met. And Rob, I know the same thing for you and the same thing for Jeff, so it's kind of funny when you meet there. It's kind of hard to get out of that business, I guess, in that mindset, right?
Yeah, I mean, she's in school, looking to move on to bigger and better things, which I'm grateful for, because
right,
this industry is definitely tiring. But, you know, I think that once you work in this industry, there's always that kind of level of understanding that, you know, some of my past relationships and so on, they just never had that understanding of, like I mentioned before, that dedication. And they can't fathom why when work starts at 11 a.m. you're there at 9, and why when you're supposed to be out at 10 you're home at 12, and why you're looking at recipes at 2 in the morning. I just think unless you're in the industry, they just truly can't grasp that concept of how
right,
much passion goes into what we do.
Dude, I tell you what, it's just, we were talking a little bit ago about, you know, technology and the business, man. I'll tell you what, back if there was so much, there's so much content out there now, it's so readily available, it's so easy, you can get lost in YouTube just watching, you know, recipes and people doing things with food. And I mean, my God, I work in New York City 3 nights a week, and I was driving home from the city last night listening to Boiling Point. You ever seen that documentary about Gordon Ramsay?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, it's about him opening his first restaurant, and obviously I wasn't watching it, but I was listening to it in the car, like, the whole way home. It was amazing. But, like, I just wonder how much, like, you know, you started this 14 years ago. I mean, there's so much more content now than even 14 years ago. But if that content was there, I don't know, do you think it would have put you further along quicker?
Well, I mean, I think that when I was starting out, I wasn't as into computer-based content. But I was always looking at cookbooks. I mean, my dad had the pro baking book and pro cooking book, and I remember sifting through those. But it's funny that you mention it, because last week I had like a little argument where somebody was saying how, you know, people are spending so much time on social media. And it was a specific target on social media. And I said to them, I said, you have to understand, like, why I have Instagram. I'm like, what do you mean? I'm like, I don't do it for the followers and post selfies of myself. I use it because it's a springboard. I have a feed of every chef worldwide posting what they're doing, their dishes, their techniques, their creativity, their plating styles. I said, do you know what it's like to literally have an online catalog that's just constantly refreshing?
Inspiration.
And you have all
nonstop.
These chefs that are able to be connected. It's an invaluable resource that's just pushed this industry so far, so fast.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
Well, I think it's also made a great network of chefs. Like, it's made a great – I mean, I have so many friends now that I've made because of social media, and I think it's actually a great thing. And not only that, it's free advertisement. I mean, I can't tell you how many times, especially as a private chef, you know, people have asked me what my social media following is, or, hey, we'd love to book you. What's your Instagram? And they look you up through there, and they find it through – I mean, it really makes a big difference when they see things like that. And, you know, what a great way, especially to market yourself. It's free. It's easy. And like you said, it's a ongoing – constantly refreshing, you know, inspiration right in your back pocket nonstop. Yeah, shit, you could take, if you want to look at, you know, fucking tostadas, you could do hashtag tostada and have 20,000 of them in front of you to look at to get inspired
from. Exactly. And they're all plated differently, yeah. All with different techniques, different ingredients from different parts of the world. I mean, does it get better than that as a chef trying to learn? I don't think so.
No, definitely not. Definitely not. Rob, do you feel the same way about it? Or are you still a more grumpy old man?
No, I do, man. I remember when I first started cooking, one of the chefs that mentored me, probably the only nice thing he did for me when I worked for him was he went and got me a subscription to Art Culinaire.
Oh, okay.
Which was like this gigantic, like 12x24, you know, book that came out like once a year.
Was it four times a year or three times a year? Something like
that? Yeah, four times a year, something like that. But it was beautiful. And I remember being like, how the fuck do people do this? Like,
right.
How could you make it through service and make every plate like that? You know, and of course we didn't do that, but we pushed towards it. You know, you couldn't turn over the restaurant three times and do that stuff with the limited seasonal help that we had. You know, but now with Instagram, you have those same chefs with videos and literally how they're doing it, and you see, you know, what sauces go in squirt bottles, what they use spoons for, what, you know, and it really has, you know, made you, it helps you wrap your head around things and then push it to the next level. And for me, I'm a fan of the social media because as a private chef, we all work better when we are pushed by other chefs.
Right.
So, you know, when you're seeing what other people are doing, you're like, okay, that's possible. That's awesome. But I would do this differently. And then you add your thing. And then maybe somebody else comes in and goes, oh my God, that's awesome. But I would do this differently. And when you can all, you know, feed off of it and look at it, and it's that's what helps us better and makes us grow. And when you don't have that competition daily to, you know, be the executive chef,
I think it's kind of what Lenny was saying. It's just a constant inspiration right in front of you there, which is great, and you can change things. So let me ask you guys this, chef. Let me ask you. So tomorrow night I have to do. So look, I'm a very very simple chef, man. I don't like to use foams. I don't like to use any kind of crazy. I like good technique, great ingredients, and I don't think you have to do a lot more after that, right? That's what I believe in. So tomorrow night, I'm at this big benefit for the Connecticut Science Center or whatever. I'm the featured demo guy, so I have to come up and make jokes and be silly, but I wanted to use science when I do my demo, right? So I'm going to make hot ice cream, all right? And it's you know, I'm sure you've seen it. It's you know, you use a little methylcellulose and you know, it gels it up at a hot temperature, and as it cools, it starts to melt. So it's like backwards ice cream. I mean, whatever. It's kind of hack, kind of silly. But that's my question for you. Does that make me hack, or is that fun? Like, I don't know. Like, regular people, they think that's cool, or they think it's stupid?
I think, look, anything that's pushing the boundaries of what we do on a regular basis, I think is fun. I mean, when people look at newer techniques and just, you know, turn their nose up to it, I just think you're more afraid than anything else. I mean, there are people who overutilize certain techniques, but I think like any new genre of anything, people kind of take it overboard and then learn how to adapt with it. I think that's part of starting a new creative process. So, you know, that's something that none of the people that are there tomorrow are probably ever going to see again.
That's
so
true.
By all means, I think it's amazing.
And that'll be fun. But do you use techniques like that? Do you use that like modernist pantry sort of, you know, stuff in any of your food, or do you keep it simple, or what's your kind of your mindset on that?
So being like a primarily Mediterranean restaurant, we try to keep things a little more basic.
Yeah.
But I love the modern approach to certain things. So like a staple in our pantry is Ultratex 8, soy lecithin, you know, agar-agar. And there's just certain things that you can do. I mean, like we have a mezze, which is like, you know, an appetizer or a small salad. Mm-hmm. And on that mezze is like yogurts and beets and Duca spice. And, you know, instead of just putting like a beet puree or something, we make a beet fluid gel. And side by side, tasting the two, texture, flavor, mouthfeel, you truthfully just cannot compare what you get out of a fluid gel when it's done right. So that's why we take the extra step to incorporate that technique, because it improves the dish that much further.
Very cool. See, I dig that, man. I dig that. That's pretty cool to do, you know, throw in those techniques on some you know, like you said, Mediterranean food. You keep it simple but fresh, really great, but you throw in those little techniques to kind of, you know, set yourself apart, make it a little bit different than everybody else, right?
Absolutely.
That's dope. I think that's awesome. I really dig that, man. So listen, let me ask you this, man. So I was looking through some of your stuff, and I saw that you've done some other things as far as, you know, like you were the sous chef at the Crescent Beach Club, you know, doing line cook stuff. I want to take you back to when you were, like, just prep cooking, like when you just first started in the game, right? I mean, what was your goal then? Was your goal, for me, when I first started in the game, you know, I was like, hey, it's a job that pays me money, like more money than working at a Best Buy or whatever. So I'll be a line cook and, you know, make my $10 an hour, which back in 1995 was good money, you know?
Yeah.
But what was like your goal when you first started doing it? Was it because, obviously because you grew up in it and you loved it, but you didn't go the pastry route?
No, I always have a small place in my heart for pastry, but the throwing things in a pot and just seasoning with my heart is a little more enjoyable to me than measuring every little thing. So I leave the baking to my dad. But you know, back to my prep cook days, I mean, like I said earlier, my objective has always kind of been the same, just to learn everything I can, learn from the good and the bad of everyone that's around me. And when that day came that I was in the position, you know, at the top, I just wanted to try to use everything in the most constructive manner and just be the best leader I can. And, you know, there's still days that I fail at those things, and there's so much more I need to learn. But I just try to provide the best environment that I can for my cooks or cooks that are in my, you know, back in the prep cook day, they're in that spot now. I just want them to kind of keep that same open mind and learn everything they can.
Are you a yell and a screamer, or are you a calm guy in the kitchen?
Oh, man, I try to be as calm as I can, but as you know, it's a tiring, stressful endeavor, and you know, once in a while, you're so emotionally invested in what you do that it's hard not to lose it a little bit. But my guys kind of look at me like, all right, like, we know you're upset, but it's all right. We'll move on. So I try to stay more calm than anything else.
Dude, you got to. Now, is your dad still cooking?
My dad is, yeah. He cooks in Chelsea Pier.
Oh, nice. He's right by me, actually. I'm in Tribeca. For most of the week. No, not far at all. But was it Neiman Marcus? Where was he at? Where was he at before? I keep thinking.
So Neiman. He was the certified executive pastry chef for Lehman Brothers.
Lehman Brothers, that's right.
Which I don't know if you're familiar or not, but the entire company was pretty much dissolved within 24 hours. So,
I mean, how did that happen for you and your family? Like, that happens. Is your dad kind of like, oh, shit? Or is it, you know, was he prepared?
No, not prepared. Nobody saw it coming, as you know, or else the investors would have been a little more ahead. But, you know, the biggest drawback in, I think, pushing my career and pushing his career was losing that job. You know, as an incentive year after year, he was with the company for 21 years. You know, they would give stock options as like bonuses.
Oh, shit.
So my college fund was indirectly tied with that. And, you know, I remember coming home the next day, and my mom and my dad were just sitting at the table just crying. And it was so unbelievably heartbreaking for me. And it definitely was a huge driving factor into wanting to just work as hard as I could and do anything I could and treat my parents better. I mean, when you're in it, like, you know, a young teen, you think you're invincible. It brought me so much humility. You know, it's something I'll obviously never forget, but it made me realize, like, no matter how hard you work, you never can plan. You never know what's actually going to happen.
What a reality check, man, huh? I can imagine. That's just got to be unbelievable. I mean, especially for your father, and like, he's been there for so long and he's got a pretty good retirement plan in place, and, you know, college is set up, and he's, you know, he's doing the right thing, he's making all the right moves, and then just like that, it's gone.
Yeah, and I mean, not nothing he could do about it. Pun, but he thought he had all his ducks in a row. So
boom, there you go. Dude, that's crazy, man. And so, but I mean, you know, like any good cook would, I mean, does what he knew. He put his head down and went to work. That's what we do, right?
That's exactly it. And that's what he's been doing as long as I can remember. And that's why, you know, when he lost his job, every other chef was reaching out. I have this opportunity, or I can help you with this, or why don't you come over here? And they knew the kind of person he was. They knew the kind of employee that he would be, and they had no problem lending a helping hand and offering him support when he needed it.
Let me ask you this. Would you hire your dad?
I would love to hire my dad, to be honest. I mean, more than anything, I mean, he'd probably want to kill me once in a while because I'm a little bit of a perfectionist, but I, you know, just having somebody with that level of heart, it's invaluable in today's world, and it's something that so many young cooks lack.
Do you ever just insist that your dad call you chef, just to make him call you chef? That's what I would do.
He makes me call him chef now.
As he should. As a father of three, he absolutely should. I tried to get my kids to call me Lord and Ruler, but that didn't work, so.
Maybe for a day.
Hey, you know what the best part is? I've taught my kids, they for the rest of their life, they will forever always say behind you now, everywhere they go, which is great.
Yeah, I think we're all guilty of doing it in, like, the wrong place. Like, I'll be trying to squeeze behind someone at the supermarket, and she'll be like, behind, and I'm like, oh, okay, like, you don't have to yell it in my ear.
That's awesome. Yeah, my kids are walking through Target going, behind you.
Yeah, like, exactly. I got my shopping cart like, behind.
Yeah. But I've told them so many times, I'm like, dude, you're going to walk behind me, and if you don't tell me you're back there, I'm going to turn around with a knife, and I'm going to impale you through the throat. You understand?
Oh, yeah, that'll instill it in them. They're terrified now.
Well, especially when they're three and you tell them that, which I realize might be a little early, but, you know, lessons learned, right? Life lessons.
Every time you pick up a knife, they run out screaming.
That's it. They just start yelling behind you and run out the door. I don't know why.
Exactly.
That's terrible. What about you, man? Any plans for kids? And especially in the lifestyle that you live and, you know, running a restaurant, it's a little bit difficult, but I guess that, you know, when you get successful with it, you can actually get to where you have a couple of days off and can be around.
That's definitely the long-term game. I mean, like I mentioned, my girlfriend now is, you know, still in school, and I'm just trying to work as hard as I can to get as far as I can, as fast as I can. And, you know, if it all pays out in the way that we want it to, then, you know, we'll be on track to settle down. I purchased a house last year. So, you know, things are definitely moving in the right direction, and I'm looking forward to settling down. But, you know, when the time is right, when she's settled in a career, when my career is stabilized, and when we can provide a life for our kids that, you know, I feel is what they deserve, then we'll be ready to do it. Yeah, absolutely.
Hey, man, it never feels like you're ready. It never feels right. But, yeah, you know, you just do the best you can.
It happens and you're ready.
Yeah, that's just the way it goes. Bro, my first time around, I had twins, and I was like, okay. All right, I guess we're doing this.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
You can't really prepare for everything, but...
Yeah,
there's no 100%
for that. I want to go back around to the Hudson Valley foie gras and talk foie gras with you for a few minutes, man. I know it's a passion of yours and something you really, you know, you care a lot about, and I'm sure you've spent a lot of times actually on the farm and stuff, right?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
I remember being – I went to Culinary Institute of America in Hyde Park, New York, in the Hudson Valley, and mm-hmm. I remember when I first learned about foie gras kind of being freaked out by it, you know, and be like, oh, man – I don't know about that. But then you taste it and you go, No, it's good. It's delicious. Who cares? It's awesome. I mean, what was your first take when you first saw, you know, I'm trying to be roundabout about it because I'm a giant supporter of it, but I don't want to sound bad about it. But, you know, as far as, you know, treatment of the animals, how they're fed and things like that, was it disturbing to you or?
Well, I'll tell you, when I first started college, I was upstate New York as well, not at CIA, but at SUNY Delhi. Mm-hmm. And a couple of my chef buddies and I, decided to take a trip.
You dropped that name right there. Let me pick that back up for you. He's showing off. That's what I'm saying.
They treated me well, so I cannot complain. But there you go. A couple of chef buddies and myself decided to take a trip out to Hudson Valley to look at the farm. We wanted to see how, like, a poultry production was done and how the foie gras was done. And the farm was like 45 minutes from the school, and we just thought it was the perfect, you know, way to do it. So we reached out to like the farm director. He said, by all means, we'll set up a tour, we'll take you around. This was years and years before I met Chef Michael or had any affiliation with Hudson Valley. So I stepped foot over there to make a conscious effort to make my own educated decision on how I felt about foie years before I ever met Michael, which I think is kind of a cool story, because I think a lot of people probably look and they say, oh, well, you got a job at Lola, and that's probably how you learned about foie. But, you know, I actually was on his farm before we even knew each other.
Damn, that's crazy, man. And then I guess you tell him that story, and he's like, oh, yeah, that's crazy, right?
Yeah, it was a small world story, including that and the fact that we both lived on Long Island and we met in Philadelphia. So it is definitely a small world.
Man, so talk about the Hudson Valley foie that you worked with, man, about the quality of it and the different grades of foie.
So, you know, just as a whole, the farm itself, it has an unbelievable standard. And foie gras gets a bad rap, and there is that whole stigma behind it. But, you know, I encourage anyone to do the same thing that I did, not only as like a young cook or as a professional chef or whatever it is, just anyone who is, you know, on the fence about it or considering trying it or anything.
I had to ask. You know, I had to ask, right? Like, I wasn't trying to come from a negative spot with it. Like, I had to ask because obviously people are going to ask me if I don't say something about it, you know.
But by all means, no. And the one thing that we provide is 100% transparency. And, you know, when you go and you learn about the anatomy of the dog, the feeding structure, how they're handled, I mean, you know, just the way that the employees are set up. I mean, we have full-time USDA inspectors that are on property, and their job is to maintain the health and the quality of those ducks. So, and they're literally recorded and graded. So if the ducks are mistreated or mishandled or there was disease or bruising or anything of that nature, it would literally be a direct reflection on how the animals are being treated. And we have an unbelievable record. I mean, I say we, but I'm not day to day on the farm, so I can't even take credit. It's just the people who are operating the farm take such care in making sure these ducks and chickens and everything that they have just lives the best quality of life. They're provided everything that they need, and the employees too. I mean, the employees take amazing care because they are treated well also. So it all kind of comes full circle. And, you know, it's always going to be a controversial thing. And when you go to a farm and you see any animals being slaughtered, whether it's a pig farm or cows or so on, it's humbling. It's sad. You know, you never want to see a life being taken. But, you know, the truth is, for food and for consumption and what we do with the ducks, I mean, people are looking at the foie gras as one specific thing. But at Lola, we utilize all of the duck that the foie is harvested from, which is the Magret duck. And it has amazing meat and legs for braising and roasting and so on and so forth. And then, you know, moving on from there, all the other parts get utilized. We do fats that are clarified. So, you know, the ducks are provided a good quality of life, the foie is harvested, and all of the duck is being used. Nothing's being discarded, nothing's being, you know, gone to waste. So it's definitely something that I think everyone needs to keep an open mind and definitely take a farm tour and feel for yourself.
Dude, that's great to hear, and I'm a giant supporter of it. I think it's delicious, and we have incisors. We like to eat meat. Let's just leave it at that. I mean, listen, literally, I had Guy Crims on, a.k.a. Guy the Butcher from – Instagram, who is a big part of Team Trex, which does real Kobe beef and Wagyu from Japan, right?
Amazing.
And he was talking about how these cows, I mean, you can trace the cow back to the farmer that raised the cow, and like that's how in depth it gets. I'm kind of imagining it's similar to the ducks at Hudson Valley Foie. Like, you know, there's probably a similar process to where you can tell which one was which, and you know, when it was harvested and what it ate and that sort of. There's probably that. Is it that meticulous as like a Kobe?
Yeah, as far as the consumer being able to trace back the lot for the duck, no. But as far as the farm goes, by all means, they literally each flock of ducks is designated a specific feeder, and from inception, their job is to feed the ducks and take care of the ducks. So once those ducks move on, it is literally the sole responsibility of that one feeder to make sure that they've been taken care of all the way through. So we do have that level of trace to know their feeding schedule. Obviously, we know what they're being fed, who was taking care of them, when they were, you know, all of those details are recorded. So, yeah, we do have that level of control.
I love it, man. It's a fantastic product. Trust me. I know firsthand. I just had some the other week. It was absolutely phenomenal. I was smashing them in my face. quite vigorously, I might add, Chef. I might add. I think I was taking them off your table very quickly.
Well, we had plenty, so no problem.
We were definitely making it happen. Well, that's awesome, man. I love it. And it's definitely, and like I said, hearing how you use the entire duck it's just awesome to hear. I love that whole story, man. Hey, Robbie, why don't you tell them a little more information where they can find out about Chef Lenny here?
So Chef Lenny is at Lenny_Messina at Instagram. And you can find him. He is the executive chef at Lola in Great Neck, New York. And he is a culinary liaison for Hudson Valley Foie Gras.
Just super awesome. A very successful guy. A guy who started from the bottom and has worked all his way up here, man. I tell you what, that's one of the most inspirational things you can do as a chef is start from the bottom and work your way up and show other people you can do that. Chef, we have a lot of young culinarians who check out this program on a pretty regular basis. What would be a great piece of advice, you think? If you could give them one piece of advice, you're coming back in time, you have your DeLorean, you hit 88.8 miles an hour, you're back in time, you have enough time to give yourself one piece of advice back in 2004 before you have to leave, what would it be?
Well, the first thing I would say is get a very clear objective of what you want out of this industry. And once you have a clear definition of what exactly that is, then if it's the right thing, if it's to be a chef, to be a leader, to be an owner, then pursue it wholeheartedly. If it's to try to get on the Food Network and make $10 million a year, you just the odds are very slim, and that's not why you should get into this industry. So if your objective is pure, then you attack it to the best of your ability, and you never waver, and you keep your head down. And the best thing I can say is just yes, chef, all the time.
That's it, man. That's it. Hey, brother, I can tell you right now for a fact, you and I both have some friends that are on Food Network that don't even make $100,000 a year. So let's just...
Exactly.
The world is changing.
You know, you get these people that come out of school and, you know, their first thing, you know, I had a kid that I interviewed and I said, you know, what's your goal? You're young. What do you want? And he said, I want to have 3 Michelin stars before I'm 30.
Said, yeah, me too. All of us do. Yeah. You fucktard.
I'm gonna be 30 soon, so I guess I'm gonna miss the boat.
You fucked up, chef.
But that's not the point. That's not even the point of Michelin star. The point of these accolades, being on TV, earning Michelin stars, being quote unquote celebrity chef, they come with your dedication, your acknowledgement through contributions in the field.
Hey, and like I think said, people
get misconstrued thinking, oh, well, if I get out and apply for Chopped 20 times in a row and get on there, I'm going to be a celebrity. And it's just the complete opposite.
Hey, we had our buddy on the show last week talking all about how Jason Santos was on talking about, I said one of the things that he and I had in common was that we took our little 5 minutes of fame that we had, you know, his was Health Kitchen, mine was doing, you know, fucking all the shows on Food Network and the taste on ABC and actually taking it and doing something with it as opposed to waiting for someone to call you. You know, that's the difference, man. You can't do those shows. Dude, those shows are dime a dozen. So much a dime a dozen that Food Network's done away with a bunch of them because, I mean, they got bought by Discovery Channel, so Discovery's like, this is stupid. But it's true. That's why you don't see Cutthroat Kitchen or any of those crazy-ass shows anymore. They're all gone. They won't be back. But but to take those time and do something with it and take the initiative to do something with that and move forward with it, I think that, you know, as a chef, having the opportunity to do any kind of media is great, but go on there and promote what you do. Don't promote who you are. You know what I mean? I think that's the best way to look at it. Promote your restaurant. Promote yourself as a private chef. Don't go on there and say, hey, I'm Chef Plum, and I'm this guy. Like, don't do that.
Well, I could not agree more, and I think so many people want to get on there just to be on the TV. But I think, like you said, you're there to prove what you can do and promote yourself and utilize it as an outlet, but you know, nothing is guaranteed. It's what you make of it and your perseverance around it that will bring you further success. Yeah.
Hey, listen, I had a PR company reach out to me a few months back, and they asked me if I would have one of their clients on the show, and they kept calling him Chef. I'm not going to say his name because it would be really mean to do, but they were like, yeah, it's Chef so-and-so. And I was like, oh, great. So I can't find any information on him. What's he doing? They're like, oh, well, he just got done with MasterChef Junior. He got fourth place. And I was like, and I'm sorry? And they're like, yeah, Chef whatever. He's 15 years old. And I was like, really? And so I told them, I said, listen, I am more than happy to have this kid on. I said, but just know, my first couple of questions are going to be, Chef, explain to me what a fond is. What are the measurements for a brunoise? And what does nappé mean? Right? I want you to tell me all that shit. And then I want to ask you, have you ever gone to work, worked a 14-hour day, fucking getting ready to leave, then realized that your dishwashers are too coked up to fucking show up for work, so you got to go back there now and wash dishes before you can go home? Has that ever happened to you, Chef 15-year-old? Has that ever happened? You know, it would have been very entertaining, that's for sure. But yeah. I mean, it just drives me nuts.
Child services when it showed up at your house.
Again. And
probably would have started crying.
Yeah, but I mean, that's the problem. I hate, man, these freaking shows. Perfect. Robbie's a weirdo. But, you know, these shows now, it's bastardizing a term that we've all worked so hard for, man. How do we fix that? How do we fix that?
You know, it's so hard because I think that the general, you know, and let me give you an example. In Mohegan, people come up to me and they're saying, oh, Chef, thank you so much, Chef. They don't know who I am or what I've done or what I have accomplished. And, you know, I think that it's a term where people feel, they understand that it comes with respect, but I don't think people really understand the depth of how you earn it. I mean, you know, even my guys at the kitchen, you know, day to day, I'm not the kind of, I want yes, chef, and call me chef. You know, I just don't need that level, and I don't even think that I'm there sometimes. And they're very respectful, and they know that I work hard, and they do call me chef, and I'm appreciative of that. But I think, you know, there's these kids who come out of culinary school, and they think they're a chef, and that is just, they have no idea of the basis of what it takes to be a chef. Being a chef doesn't mean that you got first place in your chicken noodle soup contest at school. It means that you're at home at 2 a.m. worrying because you're going to need a new hot water heater, or the convection oven isn't working, or, you know, all of the things that surround your cooks and what make you push forward. And those are all little aspects, little details lead up to one cohesive team, one cohesive kitchen, and thinking with that mentality, I think, is what makes you a chef more than anything else.
But Chef, I was on MasterChef Junior and I got fourth place. Doesn't that mean I'm a chef? Get the fuck out of here.
I love that. I mean, you know, and you have people who literally are like myself. I was on Chopped first round, I got chopped, okay. I was grateful to have the opportunity, and, you know, I'd do it again.
Yeah.
But, you know, I would never go on and say, oh, well, I'm a celebrity chef now. Like, those little details are not what makes you a chef.
Definitely not, man. Definitely not, dude. I 100% couldn't agree more. Well, brother, you're amazing to talk to. Such an easy guy to talk to. We do roundtables in this program, too, man. I'd love to have you on one of those. We have a couple of chefs on just talking about topics and shit, man. I think you'd be great at that. But
that'd be amazing.
Dude, I really, truly appreciate you. I appreciate your time. You're a good brother, and I can't think of a better guy to talk to tonight, man. I really appreciate your time. Robbie, tell them where they can find some more information about his Instagram and things like that.
You can find Chef Lenny Messina at Lenny_Messina at Instagram. He is also the executive chef at Lola at 113A Middle Neck Road, Great Neck, New York. Chef, I will definitely be popping in the near future.
Looking forward to it. Thank you guys so much.
Lenny, you're the man, brother. We appreciate it, brother, and look forward to seeing what you do in the future, and we'll be in touch, man. You got my number now. Feel free to reach out, text me, anything I can ever do. Please, don't hesitate.
Absolutely. We're going out for a drink when you're in Montauk.
I love drinking. That sounded weird, didn't it? I love drinking. Yeah, no doubt about it. Dude, it's on me for sure. No doubt about it. You can crash with me, too.
You got it. I'll bring the foie.
I love it. I love it. All right, Lenny, we'll have a great night, brother. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you guys so much. Have a great night.
There he goes.
Good night, Chef.
Right there, Chef Lenny Messina. What a good brother, huh?
Awesome guy, man.
That guy's awesome, man. I really enjoy talking to him, especially hearing his info. He was very open about the foie, too. Like, did I sound like a dick about that? I just had to ask. Like, you know, people, it has like a stigmatism, yeah, you know?
I think that's going away, man. That stigmatism's with everything, man. With freaking corn, where your vegetables genetically modified? Is your cow treated this way? It's, you know, people can make a controversy about anything nowadays, but
I don't know.
I think the important part to take away from it is that you should know your farm and know the providers of your food, and clearly with the questions that you ask, they take care in what they do, and they take pride in what they do, and which gives them a great product and and you know, one to stand by.
Well, they definitely have a great Rob, do you hear that music? It's best around. That can only mean one thing. Dave, Chef Dave has finally joined the program tonight. Dave, good evening.
Hey, what's going on, good brother? We got a good show tonight. We got Lenny.
No, Dave. Dave, the show's almost over. Good brother, the show's almost over. Robbie co-hosted tonight.
Oh, that's horseshit.
Well, I mean, you had to work, so Robbie had to co-host. And you're coming in late again. Like, I don't understand.
Maybe I'm not late. Maybe we just run on, like, a different type of time frame. Like, you're on that 12 a.m. to 11:59 p.m. I'm on that, like, intergalactic, interdimensional shit. You know, I just go with the flow because I am the ocean.
I like where you're going with that, Dave.
Dave, I don't know how much of the show you heard tonight, man. We had Chef Lenny Messina on. What a great guy, man. Did you catch any of the, in the program?
Nice. No, I thought we were starting now.
Oh no, Dave! The show started
better late than never.
No, but he's like really late. Like the show started a long time ago. Like
that's all good, man.
That's all
good, brother.
You know,
he showed up, right?
Yeah, well, I did. He showed up. He's here. He's dropping Instagram plugs. Dave, I don't know how much longer you're going to be associated with the program now. I don't know if we can keep doing this.
Oh, man. Well, you know, I mean, to each their own and stuff, but whatever. I mean, I'll be around.
I'm doing my thing. Well, it's a great show. I highly recommend you check it out. It's going to be on It'll be on iTunes and, of course, on Spotify, iHeart, everywhere you get your podcast from, as you well know. You can check out the program.
Fuck yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, Chef Dave, there he goes. He's okay. There he goes. Just music. He's out that quickly. Just like he got here, that's how we left. He came in with a bang. I don't know why. He shows up late now. He can't get the timing down right, Robbie. I don't know why.
I think it has something to do with cash.
Oh, is that what it is?
Yeah. The thing that pays him cash, he goes to.
Oh.
Okay, terrific.
I'm back. Dollar bills.
God damn it. Dave's still here. Fuck. Look, there's his music. He's still here. I didn't know he was here anymore. I thought you left.
I'm always with you, Plum. I'm always with you.
Yeah, yes, you are.
That's good brother right there.
There it is. Hey, you guys, make sure you check out Chef Lenny Messina, man. He's over at Lola in Great Neck in Long Island. If you're passing through, check him out over there. And, of course, at Lenny_Messina on Instagram. He's a good dude. And, of course, Hudson Valley Foie. We got to get that guy on, man. Let's talk about foie gras. Dave, what do you know about foie gras?
Chef Michael, man.
Yeah. It's delicious.
It's thank you, Dave, for your contributions to the show this evening.
Anytime, bro.
It's
anytime.
Delicious.
I'm glad I could contribute.
Hey, make sure you listen to the front end of the show, Dave, when you get a chance. We got a new sponsor, and we played their first spot, so it's definitely check that out.
For sure.
Dave, yeah. do you have fall on the menu right now?
No, but we have a bunch in our walk-in.
Okay. They just like to put wads of $100 bills in their walk-in and just leave it there to keep it cold.
Yeah, we definitely got to keep it cold.
That's
cold
it.
Cash, baby.
Staff law.
Well, Robbie, yeah. I appreciate you taking the time tonight, man, and joining us and stepping into the co-host duties. Great job, as always.
Thank you, sir.
Good times.
I'm no Dave, though.
What? Well, I mean, there's only one Dave.
Don't you ever forget that.
Never.
I'm starting to feel neglected. Like, what's going on with these Thursdays? Like, it's like, hey, show up at 11, and then I get here at 11, and you're like, show's over.
No, the show starts at 10. It's at 10.
Oh. See, that whole different time scale. You got to get on that, like, interdimensional shit, you know. Be the ocean, baby. Be fluid.
Oh, all right. Be fluid. Move around like the waves.
Should we have a post show with Dave?
No.
That sounds great.
I have a long day tomorrow. I got to go to the Connecticut Science Center tomorrow and do TV tomorrow morning.
That sounds like a great time. You're complaining about having fun with science.
Having fun with science. Hey, just so you guys know, if you're around in the Connecticut area and you want to, I'm going to be at Science Straight Up, Hartford's smartest happy hour tomorrow. It's called For the Love of Food, happening at the Connecticut Science Center. I am the featured performer. Tickets are $12 at the door, $5 for members and students. Come on by. It's from 5:30 to 8:30. Cocktails, food. Our buddy Ryan Christopher is going to be there. I'm going to be there. Should be a lot of fun. I'm going to make hot ice cream, Dave. That's what I'm making tomorrow.
How do you do that?
Methylcellulose.
Oh, I was gonna, what?
Yep. Science!
That's what's up. I was going to say, isn't hot ice cream just called like soup?
No. It still holds its shape. And of course, and then on Sunday, you guys, I'm hosting the one-year anniversary party for Harlan House in Bridgeport, Connecticut. That is the restaurant that was featured on the end of the first season one of Restaurant Road Trip. I will be there encouraging people to drink cornucopious amounts of alcohol. So it should be a lot of fun. If you're around, come check that out. That's a free event happening from, I think, 1 to 4 or 4 to 7. It's going on all day. I'll be there. Whatever. Come hang out. Harlan House in Bridgeport on Sunday. And, of course, this weekend, Friday, tomorrow, I will be at Science Straight Up for the Love of Food, the Connecticut Science Center, Friday, February 8th. That's tomorrow. 21 and up only, 5:30 to 8:30. Tickets are $12 at the door. And, of course, $5 for members and students. Come see us. Alcohol, food, and science. Should be a lot of fun. There you go. That's how I read a promo. How was that? That right?
That's fantastic. I'm about to call in to work both days because you just have convinced me to go with your promos.
Wow. Well, that worked out well. I guess it worked then, huh?
Yeah. You know, everybody's calling into work on Friday and Sunday now.
Yeah. I mean, they got wine making, chocolate making. They got some coffee roasters there. They got a celebrity mixologist. I didn't know that was a thing, but they got that. Should be fun.
Nice.
Like cocktails and dreams, like that kind of mixologist.
That is what my nickname was in high school. Cocktails and dreams. That was my nickname. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us tonight here on Plum Love Foods. We appreciate you guys very much. Big shout out to our guest, Chef Lenny Messina at Lola. And of course, big thanks to Chef Robbie for stepping in. Dave, you're late. I'm not sure how many more of these I can take.
I mean, you got like at least 3 more left in you before
there you
like
go.
Really irritated, right?
Food's the most important thing we have in life. Everything important in life revolves around food. We'll see you next week. Give it the time it deserves. We'll see you.
Shut the fuck up for 30 seconds. You might learn something.
Thank you for listening to Plum Love Foods Live. See you next week, good brothers and sisters.